Before we begin, I wanted to give a huge shout out to the folks at Amazon Music for partnering with us on this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. But more on this later. Right then, let's get right into today's episode. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the first ever F1.5 Inside Line podcast episode. Because at last, the moment we've been dreaming of for the last couple of years actually now, wiping Max Verstappen off the race classification and then calculating what the race looks like, that has come true. Verstappen has DNF'd. And do you hear the smile on my face? Do you? Do you guys?
It's such an irony. Just in the preview episode of the Australian Grand Prix, for all our millions of listeners out there, I don't know how many zeros or millions has, but I know our listeners have a lot of zeros, so I'm just guessing it's the millions. We actually spoke of why it's actually not easy for Max to just show up and drive, get pole and win and get fastest lap. We spoke of that. We spoke how everything in Red Bull needs to fire. And actually, the right rear brake actually caught fire, right? That's what happened. I love how Max was so candid post-race. He said, it's a mechanical sport. These things happen. The right rear brake didn't release and it kept getting warmer and warmer. And then what happens when things get warmer and warmer? It catches fire.
Yeah.
So just so be it. I would have loved to see what would have happened to Red Bull. Because I think Checo Perez said Sainz would have won even if Max didn't have issues. Very bold.
But the important thing is, Sainz has won. Guys, I've been predicting this for the last, 3 years now. And I've only gotten one opportunity a year. And now it seems like the best way to win a Formula One Grand Prix is work very hard, get to Ferrari, have appendicitis. That's the best way to get a brilliant result on your return, clearly.
I definitely think there's going to be a surge of appendicitis surgeries happening in the UK and in Monaco the next couple of days. And it's all going to be attributed to Carlos Sainz and the Australian Grand Prix. I mean, they're making quite a few jokes about it as well, which is also nice to see. But there's just some fire that suddenly erupted in the guy, and him doing so well after coming from the surgery, recovering in less than 2 weeks and putting the car on the front row and winning the race. That's incredible.
Yeah. And he made the best radio message post-race on the appendicitis thing. You know, this wasn't broadcast. Maybe it'll come up on the YouTube and Twitter and whatever of Formula One. He actually said, are you sure it's one appendicitis and not two? Because if it's the second, I can remove that one as well. And then he and his, chief engineer on the radio were having this banter. And I think the statement of the race is when Carlos Sainz said, I am still jobless for next year. And could there be a better job interview than this weekend for him?
Yeah, not making one mistake. And finally, all the claims of people saying that, well, maybe Ferrari made the right choice. Well, who's the driver who's won the most races for them in the last couple of years? Funny how it all works out, right? But all attributed, as we all discussed, guys, down to one minute mistake for Red Bull. And I think it was meant to be Max's 11th consecutive race win, right? What a record that would have been.
10th, I think. 10th, yeah.
Ah. But nevertheless, so Carlos, it's insane.
Carlos Sainz Carlos Sainz should rename himself from Smooth Operator to Verstappen Streak Breaker or something, because he broke the 10 race winning streak. Then he said, I can go one better by breaking it when it's just 9 in. And can you imagine Charles Leclerc did not win it despite being the blue-eyed boy, the faster one on the single lap, whatever that everyone does with Charles Leclerc. Having said that, I really wish this was a battle on track and not a Verstappen retirement. Because I know we've got, half a million of those fans who listen to us are from the Netherlands. They must be rueing the fact that in Singapore, it was a Red Bull that didn't deliver. In Australia as well, it was a Red Bull that was the problem. And for once, guys, I thought of it this way, that for once, Red Bull was under attack on track. Because in Bahrain and Jeddah, they were under attack off track with all the off-track controversies.
Exactly. And even then, Sergio Perez only managing to finish sixth. I mean, Sundaram, at the live F1 pit stop that we had, that conversation sparked so many debates in Mumbai. I mean, we have, what, 60 people turning up for the event? Literally 10, 15 of those engaging in a hardcore fight about what's next for Sergio Perez, and more importantly, who can get in that seat? Because something like P5, P6, I don't think that's going to be tolerated for too long.
You know, I've been waiting for this moment, not for this moment where Verstappen DNFs, but I knew at some point in time, this topic is going to erupt once again about Sergio Perez. Yeah. Because, yeah, he's come second in the last couple of races, so that's totally fine. He's doing his job. But the fact is that he's not close enough to Max Verstappen on race day to give him cover, to give him a choice of strategy. And in the rare occasion that he actually doesn't finish or he retires or has a mistake, there's no Sergio Perez to take the remaining points. And that's actually going to hurt Red Bull. Christian Horner actually came out to say that he had some sort of flow damage. But the fact is, that's what happens if you start in the midfield and you have a bunch of other drivers to overtake. If you have the fastest car, you are expected to start on the front row or in the front two rows. Sergio Perez has not had that since the summer break last year.
But he got that grid penalty, thanks to Red Bull not informing him. So that is also on Red Bull. And the mystery from this weekend, there are actually two mysteries, or maybe the third one we can make something up. But the mystery from this weekend is, was Red Bull actually competitive? Would they have been competitive at the hands of Max Verstappen? That's one. We can park that. We'll never know. But the bigger mystery, my dear friends, is, did Fernando Alonso break test George Russell?
Oh, yes.
Or not? And did he actually do the right thing? What do you guys think?
Who goes first?
Go first, Samuel. Go first.
I know. Wait a second. I know why there's silence, because Sundaram's middle name is Fernando. It's not his dad's name or his family name. Its middle name is Fernando. Maybe he's put in Fernando Alonso as well. And Samuel is like, are there a lot of listeners in Spain who are also probably there and so on? But go for it, Samuel.
I mean, I am so conflicted about this one. It's a little naughty, for sure. But the thing is, that's what Fernando Alonso is. When you see that fine line between what's naughty and what's downright illegal, there's a very, very thin line, very thin margin that only someone like Fernando Alonso, with his renewed enthusiasm and a constant sense of pestering other people, like, hey, I will push you to the absolute limit. That's what he's found it. And in most of these cases, it's someone like Fernando Alonso who can exploit it. At the end of the day, the stewards thought this one was illegal, so here comes the penalty. But there have been so many other times, like back in Imola, where if you see the kind of moving under braking he's also done, some would claim that to be downright illegal, but he's managed that in the past. So if there's anyone who does it, it's Fernando Alonso. I think we should expect it, shouldn't we, Kunal?
You know, frankly, I love Fernando's post-race statement. He said, we anyway drive under the limit of the car, which means that they're driving slowly across the whole circuit and you choose to decide where you want to be slow. I decided to be slow at that corner, right? And why? And I see, this is a motor race. You're not driving on the motorway or the autobahn or, you know, some street of Mumbai or whichever part of the world you live in, right? This is a motor race. You will use all skills that you have inside the cockpit to try and get position. We see, I mean, 2016 Abu Dhabi comes to my mind. Yeah. Lewis Hamilton was driving as slow as he possibly could. Of course, it didn't lead to a mistake or an accident or whatever. But he, you know, driving and winning the race at the slowest possible pace, the good old saying that goes. So I actually stand with Fernando. It's down to two things. What he did was cheeky, was naughty, as you said. What George Russell, of course, you know, and they're great friends. I don't know if the friendship still continues after being put in the wall. George Russell can't blame Fernando, even though he's indirectly done that, for him losing control of his car.
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, one of the reasons he also lost control is not because he's not talented. It's because of the dirty air that these cars anyway generate. So it was circumstantial. Right. And, you know, Fernando Alonso has said it very beautifully in that statement of his saying, I had this in Imola 2005, 2006, as recently as Brazil 2023 with Checo Perez as well. Right. And he said, you know, this is how motor racing has always been. But if you look at Imola 2005, 2006, Fernando is Fernando. But Russell is no Schumacher. That's the key point to remember out here. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the talent, but it's just circumstantial. And this is actually what I love about motor racing. We are just getting too sanitized.
Yep. Silence, Sundaram? No words from
now I go
Fernando,
in? Now I go
die hard
in? Okay.
Fan? No, do you want to?
No, because see, no matter how much I love the guy, the fact is that what he does on track is always slightly more different than what the others do. He's really a wily customer. He knows the rule book in and out, and he always tries to exploit these loopholes. We've seen that a lot over the last couple of years, be it Russia 21 and a lot of other races as well. He's always trying to do something naughty, like you say. And I wouldn't be surprised that he's done this on purpose, because he can do that. And the sort of radio exchanges that happened after Russell crashed was also a little sus in a way. And that really did not come in the discussion with the stewards, because he apparently said that he's having problems with the car. But what Fernando then goes on to say in the stewards discussion is that I slowed down because I wanted to slow down. The only problem is he knew that George Russell was closing in, and he was closing in quick because he had fresher tires. So probably doing that move in that fast section is probably a risky thing to do, which is where I feel that he should have probably done better.
Wait a minute. So are you saying if he pulled that move in a slow section, it would have been okay?
Ooh.
No, just being mindful about the fact there is a driver who's really closing on, there's only half a second of distance between you and the driver behind. And the fact that he had not followed that pattern of braking in the previous 7-10 laps, that's always what the stewards are going to be seeing. And the fact that he mentions Imola 2005-2006, stewards are literally inconsistent over two consecutive seasons. There's going to be no comparison to Imola 15-17 years ago. So that's the thing. Even if there
but,
is no
but
complete
isn't,
proof,
isn't Imola what we always remember? When we go to Imola, we remember that fight.
Yes, that's the thing.
What I mean is a driver shouldn't drive to what he thinks the stewards will consider fair or not. A driver, at least thinking from my driver's helmet, if I may, even though I've driven like 1,000th of what Fernando's done, I think you use all the tools you have. I mean, you go inside, you go outside. Tomorrow you'll have a rule saying you can't overtake on the outside if you're half a wing ahead, behind. I just think it's getting too sanitized. And a very interesting thing from Fernando's post, okay, he says, being responsible for not making every lap the same is a bit surprising. And I so stand with that. You know, when you are in, so what's he saying? He's saying, I braked 100 meters earlier. So what? Is there a rule that says I have to brake at a certain point?
No.
Okay. No. So it's not down to Russell. It's not down to stewards. It's just how we keep sanitizing the sport. And, you know, I love this. And Fernando is not a native English speaker. So I'm, you know, if he's written this, that's great. Otherwise, he's gotten help, which is even better. He also said we wouldn't be having this conversation if there was no gravel at that corner, which is so true.
That I agree. Yeah. That's true. That's one thing I really agree with, because the fact is that although it mentions this in the rule book that penalties are not handed out depending on what consequence happens. This is the same case that happened in Australia last year as well. It is not because of Alonso crashing with Sainz that Sainz was given the penalty. The only fact that incident shouldn't have happened. I genuinely feel in today's case, George Russell retiring from the race was probably the reason why this was investigated so much, and the fact that he was given a drive-through or a 20-second penalty in the end. That is one thing that I really think was a contributing factor. But I still don't agree to the fact that drivers cannot have different patterns when it comes to the lap time. In that case, you could probably brake test, or you could lose speed on a straight, right in the middle of a straight. I really feel that there are designated braking points. You usually tend to do that. Why would you do that much earlier? That's what baffles me.
On that as well, right? It would be horribly inefficient to brake somewhere like the straight. So where would you brake in that particular braking zone? And then you can be particularly naughty about when and how, because there are certain corners where even if you brake, you don't lose that much if you slow the other person down. Because you might lose 3/10, but the other, well, they've got to slam it hard, even more than you, and end up having a 5/10 of a second loss. So that's where it's so cheeky, is it not?
Yeah, and let's remember, George, if we were to talk purely on braking performance, George's braking performance would have been better than Alonso's, why he was on fresher tires, hence more grip, etc., etc. So Fernando braking earlier would have anyway been. There can never be a break marker that everyone has to break
This point. Of course.
Yeah, if you break before the point, hey, it's inappropriate slow driving. Because I have the statement open out here, and it says, at no time may a car be driven unnecessarily slowly, erratically, or whatever else then that follows. And I just think it's not fair. This is ridiculous. And I would have said this, I don't care if it's Alonso. It could have been Logan Sargeant. Maybe I wouldn't have been as vocal. But
so then, once again, I know I'm diving very deep into this, but then Saudi Arabia 2021, do you think what Verstappen did was right or wrong? Because in my opinion, that's actually dangerous. I mean, I'm contradicting myself, but even though there's no particular braking zone and that was horribly inefficient, what Max did, was still like possible.
Oh, that's not.
You know, Fernando's done this in Abu Dhabi 2023 as well. He did that with Lewis Hamilton. He was looking into the mirrors and slowed down right before a turn. And that was not, he was not penalized for that. So this is the thing. Fernando has a history of doing these really weird things. And I really think he's had a couple of instances in the pit lane as well when Sergio Perez, he exits the pit box and he breaks there saying, oh, he came right in between and I had to stamp on the brakes. This happened in Saudi Arabia as well. So he's had that sort of a history where he tries to be a little cheeky at times. And I think this time he might have gone a little overboard. And the only reason I think the penalty is given is because the stewards don't believe his version of the story. If that's what he intended to do, right. But they don't have evidence that 100% proves that this was what he was trying to do. And it seems that it was a little dangerous.
If there's one person who can actually confirm this was a brake test or no, is David Coulthard. For all the new fans of the sport joining in, when Somil was all of 3 years old, okay, maybe you weren't even born then. I don't know. 2003, yes. Nürburgring, Fernando Alonso versus David Coulthard in the braking zone for the chicane. Nürburgring was an old circuit in Germany, which held the German Grand Prix, again, for the new fans. That's when Fernando actually brake tested David Coulthard. So I'm going to ask David Coulthard what he thinks, what happened here. But we can actually move on because we are not stewarding. I'm just so deep into it. There's no right, wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Or rather, you know, Fernando has, been put in the wrong by the stewards, just the way Lewis Hamilton was made to lose his eighth title by the stewards. So let's just move on.
But yeah, actually, you may love him, you may hate him, but you can't quite ignore him, especially if you're the stewards after looking at all the things he's doing. But another man who cannot be ignored, and his results can also not be ignored, Lewis Hamilton. What a heartbreak, huh? I mean, for Mercedes, a double DNF. Sundaram, I don't even remember in God's ears when that happened, because I remember when we learned two stats. Firstly, the one that whenever we see... Who was it that gets DNFs? Whenever we see Lewis Hamilton DNF, Carlos Sainz ends up winning a race. Was it Hamilton or
George Russell.
Yeah. Russell, exactly. George Russell. Firstly, that crazy stat. And then the second one, that Mercedes' last double DNF was in 2018.
Austria 2018. 6 years.
Such a rare one. Yeah. Seriously.
Last no score double was 2021 Baku or something when they did something.
Yes.
But Lewis Hamilton not scoring. He probably decided if Max is not competing, this isn't really a race. I race in Formula 1, not Formula 1.5. I might as well just park it. But again, Lewis said, you know, I didn't feel anything. The engine just went like that, which is such a strange thing. And Lewis is actually building a great number of quotes, which we can keep using. You know, he said, typically we struggle in the high speeds and not in the low speeds. But here we were struggling in the low speeds and not the high speeds. So his point is this Mercedes is just struggling irrespective of circuit characteristics.
Insane. And with that, we have another drop from Russell as well, which is also quite a big story in itself. But I'd love to know what you thought it was, Kunal, because you've driven far more race cars than all of us have. I'm just intrigued. Like, what could it be? Because clearly, as Martin Brundle said on the commentary, cylinders don't die down that quickly. It must be just something switched off. Maybe electrical power not getting in there. It's weird, right? Have we heard anything from them?
I'm going to let you guys in on a big secret. Okay. Whenever manufacturers have, and I mean manufacturers, so I mean Ferrari, I mean Mercedes, I mean Renault, Honda, four of them, since we've got four of them, right? Whenever there's an engine failure or any kind of failure, they will typically say technical issue and leave it at that. They don't want to use the word failure because it impacts the overall brand. And Lewis Hamilton has actually gone and committed a PR mistake. Not PR mistake, but a PR harakiri, if that's the word, by saying engine failure on the radio. And I can tell you, and the secret is 2014, and I'm not going to name all the brands, but you all can take a guess. When the hybrid power units were all blowing up left, right, and center, there was a diktat sent by manufacturers to customer teams saying, you are not allowed to say what failed on the cars. We will issue the statement. You can say the car failed, but you are not allowed to say what failed. Remember, Formula One is also a PR exercise. If you Google Ferrari F1 engine blow up, there will be nothing on the official channels. Similarly for Mercedes, similarly for whatever, because these are incidents that are taken away. So Lewis Hamilton, whatever it is that blew up, there was an engine failure. What part of the engine? We don't know, because now it's no longer an engine. It's a power unit, as we know.
Yeah.
But that's a PR headache for Mercedes, which he's like, I'm anyway going, so I might as well diss the brand if I can.
So this is just basically the case with the disgruntled champions.
Yep. Exactly. No holds barred. Absolutely. What a terrible, terrible day for Mercedes. But you know what the best part was? We saw, and actually we, by the way, folks, don't laugh at us at this. We were really serious about this, right? Don't break our hearts. But when we heard the news of Williams actually ditching Logan Sargeant, we thought, why don't we invite him to one of our Inside Line F1 pit stops in Mumbai? We sent him the invitation. Just didn't come, Sundaram. And that is a bit sad. We were bitterly disappointed not to host Logan. But Williams were absolutely right, desperate in what they were doing. And out of everything that could have happened to make sure that Williams would be paid off as a team that took the right call, gambled on something and it paid off, they didn't get the points. But not one, but two Haas got them. What a bitter disappointment that must be. Like, you bet your house on something and your worst enemy ends up getting it and laughs right in front of your face and leaves with it.
See, the fact is that Haas definitely, I mean, it is a surprise that Haas have been doing so well considering how their campaign ended last year. But the fact that they have been literally on it in the race in each of the opening three rounds. And from Williams' perspective, I think they did the right decision of giving Albon the car over Logan Sargeant. I think people have spoken enough about it. But as fans, we just look at it from a sporting view. We want everything to be, we want it to be level playing field. We want everything to be on merit. Whereas teams and constructors and sponsors have to look at it from the business perspective as well. They always need to put their best foot forward. They need to safeguard themselves because it's a very close championship and every single point matters. So in that sense, Albon was their best chance. And this actually takes me back to this little dialogue in this movie Rush, which I've always wondered, when can I use? And I think this was the perfect moment. When James Hunt goes for that interview at McLaren, one of the team engineers tells the boss at McLaren that you'll never win the championship with Jackie X. You just might with James Hunt. And this is exactly the case that happens with Logan Sargeant. You'll probably not score points with Logan Sargeant, but you just might with Alex Albon. That's probably what was going through James Walls' mind, and that led to this change.
Okay, yeah. I'm gonna shoot up a question. Were we all okay with it because it was Logan Sargeant who's not proved himself? Let's put it bluntly.
Yeah.
Would we have been less okay with it if there was another driver who had proven himself a lot more?
Of course.
Or would it still be okay to just back the best horse who can get you the points?
And it's happened historically as well. Let's not forget, Formula One has been very capitalistic in that nature, if you may. Because normally teams wouldn't think about, okay, which one of these drivers would win. Because that gentleman driver era is more or less gone nowadays. So it's more about who can fetch us the best bang for the buck. And it's happened with Senna as well, who actually used to dictate which one of his other drivers would become his teammate at Lotus. That was genuinely a thing. Same at McLaren as well. To now, this with the team now supporting Alex Albon. I mean, why wouldn't you? You've got to make sure that you put your best foot forward. But what it does do is pretty much ensure that for Logan Sargeant, this is the final nail in the coffin. There's no coming back from this. If the team says, we don't even trust you to score points in any case, even at the most chaotic race, that's it. I think the writing's on the wall.
Even at the most chaotic race, and a race we actually think we will be good at.
Yeah.
That's also one of the things, right? And guess what? Alexander Albon was 900th of a second away from the points. And, you know, I actually dug through some strategy, and Albon was very clear. He said, we weren't quick enough. So we kept pitting early to try and be in the fight. And in the last 10 laps, we just gave up because that was it. We couldn't pit again. And then, you know, we ran out of pace. And that's what happened. And hats off to Haas, because like you said, Sundaram, Haas has been in the fight all three races, right? They've used the teamwork to get points, etc. And both Haas drivers scoring today is great for them. Both of them actually turned around and said, this year, it's actually so much fun to go racing, because on Sundays, typically we would wake up knowing we're going to be nowhere in the race pace, okay? They're saying now we actually know that we will have a chance in the races, even though we've sacrificed single lap pace. So this whole change of guard that's happened, this whole more technical outlook to how Haas performs that's happened, has delivered them results. And guess what? It's continued to add points while Alpine hasn't, and, you know, Sauber hasn't, and whoever else hasn't. But yeah, it's great testimony to how they've just focused on race pace.
Wait, Sundaram, can I just throw a spanner in the works and really make it a tough conversation for all of us? This more technical approach can be associated with who? Who is the most technical, sort of shy, reserved, but doing their own thing kind of leader in Formula One? It's Ayako Matsu, Haas's new leader. How much of this can be attributed to him? Because development started when Gunther Steiner was around. And that's a fact. That has to be. Development can't be coming in that early. So it's weird how Gunther's one last hurrah is what is cheering Haas on. And now he's stuck left there just interviewing the race winner. That's such a sad decline.
This kind of looks a little bad on Gunther Steiner as well. Because the moment he leaves the team, everything seems to be working well, at least on race day. But I always thought that the problem wouldn't have gone away because Ayako Matsu was always a part of the team and he was always a part of the problem. I always felt that this was not the right direction, and he's clearly proven me wrong and probably proving a lot of people wrong who doubted him. At least in the first three races, like Kunal said, the teamwork has been impeccable. And I'm sure he's been setting a lot of these processes within the team so that they are able to maximize and get the most points possible. Last race and this race, the teamwork has been impeccable, which is great.
And I must say, actually, Gunther Steiner, by the way, in my view, at least did a really bad job of interviewing the drivers. I don't know why he had to keep repeating the questions and whatever. So not only did his team shine on track, but his now media role, whatever he's taken, has not sort of had the best debut as possible. But I'll put it this way. I don't think it is Gunther Steiner's swan song. I don't think Haas has really developed itself as such. What Haas has done is it's bettered its tools, and it's extracting more from their current setup, something that even Ferrari is actually focusing on doing. So it's not really about the upgrades and changes and stuff. It's just, can we just focus and do it? And remember, F1 is a political sport. Maybe Gunther didn't want them to do it last year. Who knows? Maybe Ayao didn't want to do it, thinking, hey, if I do it and Gunther takes the credit, I don't get to be, you know, the team principal. And now if I turn around and say, if you make me, you know, the team principal while also being the head of engineering, I'll do it. So it could be a mix of that. But can you imagine Haas has actually scored ahead of Alpine and ahead of Sauber? And for the life of me, I can't remember the 10th team that has not scored yet.
But wait, on that, really, I want an insight on that. What tools are we talking about? Like, was Haas the team whose new team principal was disappointed to see 20,000 people, or rather 20,000 car parts being managed on Excel? That report came out recently, right? I'm guessing
that was Williams.
That was Williams, Jean Valls. That's what I'm guessing, because that's what it sounds like. I couldn't quite get a chance to read the whole thing. But it's interesting how at Haas, this whole dynamic is now shaping up. Like, what sort of parts are they upgrading? Is it like the wind tunnel is clearly not theirs, but is it more technical software stuff that they're building upon?
So from what the team's been saying, they're saying we're actually not building new tools. We are bringing regular upgrades as we would, right? But we are just focusing a lot more on setups. And how you do that is by actually focusing on specific goals during your run plans. And like we saw in preseason testing, Haas actually didn't focus on single lap pace, right? And they are still, you know, in fighting distance for Q3. In fact, Magnussen got into Q3 this time. Hülkenberg got in last time, right? So what they actually have done, Sommelier said, you know what? We'll figure out single lap pace. why don't we just focus on extracting, fine-tuning, whatever it is that we can get in terms of race base? And that's what Haas has been doing even in the free practices that happen. And that's beautiful to see that, because, you know, the general perception with now F1 focusing on who's bringing what upgrades and teams have to declare what upgrades they bring. But truth is, just because you've got upgrades doesn't mean they will work, right? You can even extract more from your existing packages. And, you know, Nico Hülkenberg, Kevin Magnussen, they are experienced racers. They know what they're doing. They know what's happening. For them to actually turn around and say, and Magnussen actually said this, saying, I wake up on a Sunday and I wake up, you know, knowing that I can go in the fight. Otherwise, last year, I used to just wake up knowing I'm going to go backwards in the race. And that's so much more confidence building, you know, as a driver. You know your tires are not going to give up.
And so they've just worked this setup out to manage the tire wear. It's amazing how they must have managed ride height, things like damper heights, and the way everything works, suspension setups, aero rakes, like the rake angle at which they work. It's crazy, isn't it, Sundaram?
I'm also wondering, so Haas have been getting points because they've been doing things right, okay? And their only competitors are the RB team, the Sauber team, and now Alpine. Are they getting it wrong? Because quite clearly, there's a lot of wrong happening there. Sauber, especially in the pit lane, Alpine have just generally lost a lot of pace. The Visa Cash App RB team is functioning on one level at this point in time. So quite clearly, the competitors don't have it all right at this point as well.
And that's the beauty of Formula One. When you strike, when your competitors don't, that's the best time to actually, you're sort of, you know, when you choke slam someone when they're anywhere dizzy, kind of WWE talk, if I can go back 30 years to when I saw the first, whatever. But Sauber clearly, you know, still slow pit stops, and they actually believe they could have scored a point. Okay. The team representative, I don't know, some strange title that they have there, Bravi, I think, or Bruni, I can't remember.
Aluni Bravi, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Alessandro is his name. He actually went and said, we'll fix it. We'll fix the slow stops. And Valtteri Bottas actually got out and said, we have the race pace to fight for the point. So I'm really hoping they bring that to the fore as well. And we spoke of Alpine. Ocon was the only three-stopper, had a tear-off stuck in his brake duct at some point. And I was saying, you know, which was the third team not to have scored points yet. It's, of course, Williams that has not scored points. Albon has finished 11th in the last two races. That's the fun part out here. But anything else that we have missed? Yuki Tsunoda, he has scored points. You said a hero home race hero rating. Both home race drivers played second fiddle. Daniel Ricciardo, I've noticed that the slower he gets, the longer his media answers and interviews go, because he's getting all philosophical and, you know, in depth. I'm sorry, I'm not making fun of him. I'm just saying, you know, that's the correlation that I've seen. But anyway, you know, Yuki Tsunoda single-handedly finishing seventh, scoring 6 points, has now got Racing Bull's sixth place in the Constructors' Championship. They already have become the seventh team to have scored. And all midfield teams have said, in a perfect race, if all top five teams finish, our chances to score points are zero.
One thing I actually did through this whole weekend is I watched the classification of every session, free practice. And the two names that were really impressing me throughout were, Oscar Piastri and Yuki Tsunoda. Because Tsunoda was always there or thereabout in the top 10, 11. And he's been showing that he has that sort of pace right throughout this weekend. And him still getting points P7 kind of just shows that he was strong. Whereas it was completely the opposite for Danny Ric, unfortunately. Oscar Piastri also was quite good throughout this whole weekend. He did have that little off, going off track today, and he had a slow pit stop as well. But it would have been nice to have him on the podium. He would have been the first Australian to get on the podium in F1 history. Danny Ric did get on the podium in Australia.
But he was disqualified. Dude.
No, it's the first time. No. It would have been the first time.
He's going to bring Valtteri Bottas.
Exactly, 2019 Australian Grand Prix. What do you mean we didn't have an Australian on the podium?
I apologize.
But a quick look at the standings. I'm going to go quick look at the standings. Very interesting. Oliver Bearman, who's driven one race and probably is only going to drive one race, is at 6 points. Yuki Tsunoda
totally
is at 6 points.
Forgotten about him.
I totally forgotten about him. Yeah, and he had a disastrous F2 weekend. But They are 2 points away from Lewis Hamilton, who's, of course, not scored this weekend. And in general, just a four-point gap between the top two, which is Leclerc and Verstappen. I know we probably, five races down the line, it's going to be like a 100-point gap or something. Yeah. But it is just so close out there. And Oscar Piastri is actually 1 point ahead of Lando Norris in fifth place. And if there's one question, I actually go back when I think of today's race or this weekend's race, is could Ferrari have taken pole and then led from there to win? Because both the Ferrari drivers lost their laps, and Sainz for pole and Leclerc just for whatever he could have gotten in that fast turn 9 and 10 sequence. And was it that the tires were done by then, or maybe it was just the wind and the high speed? You know, we remember wind has always brought in a lot of inconsistencies in their package. But who knows, you know, if Ferrari were genuinely in the fight or if Max could have made something out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Ah, what a crazy, crazy weekend after all. I mean, what an incredible win. And we have a different winner. It is Carlos Sainz. I can't believe it, guys. So many races of me predicting him to win, and he's got it once again. But folks, what a beautiful note it is to end our race weekend on. But we'll be back with more. Firstly, another Inside Line F1 pit stop in Mumbai for the next race in Japan. That's also going to be at Car Social mostly. So stay tuned on our social media channels. And also with more special episodes coming in rather soon. Take care, everyone. Have a nice day. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Inside Line F1 podcast. Before we ended, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Amazon Music once again for partnering with us on this episode of the podcast.